for modular curves over Q or over some ring of integers, maybe Z localized at a certain number of primes. So let's begin with a positive integer. Then we have this congruent subgroup that you've seen before. And attached to this, we have the modular curve. And this maps to the modular curve of level 1, which I'll call y of 1. And it has a compactification. X0 of n, which is where you throw in these cuts to, as in Frank's talk, you have this kind of these cuts going up infinity, you want to fill them up. That's how you do it. Similarly, this has compactification as well, which is call x1. So this is just. Great. So the point now is that both these compactifications have natural structures of as Riemann surfaces, compact Riemann surfaces. And so x0 of n and x1 are compact Riemann surfaces. And are therefore naturally algebraic curves over C. Okay, and so this means that you can think of y0 of n and y of 1 as well as these curves with some points removed, so they are affine algebraic curves. So if you have a tau in the upper half plane, and from here you get this lattice and this elliptic curve. And this elliptic curve comes to you with a Weierstrass equation. It looks like that. And then you have the J invariant attached to. Oh, sorry. Is that okay? Or this itself is a bad height? All right, so let me just... Okay. So if you have a Weierstrass equation, and you can attach to this the J invariant, which looks like so, right, and it turns out that this J invariant gives you a map, a holomorphic map from here to C. All right, and this is in fact algebraic. And identifies, in fact, x1 with the affine line over C, thought of as this spec of CJ, and sorry, projective line. And inside of that, you have y of 1, and that's isomorphic to the affine line, which you can think of as. Okay. Okay, so in general now, you have or any field there's an equivalent to categories between the category of smooth projective curves over K require them to be geometrically connected, and fields K, big K over little K of transcendence degree 1 if you want them to be geometrically connected, that condition translates saying they don't have any algebraic functions in K apart from this K itself. Okay, so what we see here is that X of 1 is a smooth projective curve, which is a projective line, attached to, this is the functor, it's just C goes to the function field of curve C. Okay, so in particular what we see is that C of X of 1 is field of rational functions over J. And so x0 of n is a so this is a ramified cover. So it translates to a finite extension of function fields. So, and we can say very explicitly what this extension is. Let me take a moment to do that. So, let's set take f sub n to be the set of matrices in SL2Z. Sorry. Not in SL2Z, but matrices with integer entries that satisfy AD equals N and B is between 0 and D, and finally the GCD of ADD, or positive. Yeah, so this is in matrices with positive integer entries. Okay? So this is a set of double coset representatives for the following sets, SL2Z this is a set of not a set of double coset representatives, but this is a this is one of my the set of coset representatives for a double coset N001 SL2Z is equal to has this decomposition. Okay? So I see. Let me bring this down. Let me go back up there. Wait. Yeah, this seems like less of a hassle. All right, so let's consider the nth modular polynomial will be defined as follows. So the polynomial with coefficients in what? Well, that'd be made clear. So take alpha and S of N. And take that product. All right. And so this is some polynomial whose coefficients are functions on the upper half plane. Basically, the symmetric functions in these functions that you see here. And so then you have a theorem. I think this goes back to Kronecker. So A, first of all, the SM of tau. So one thing about the J invariant is that it's a modular function. That is, it's just a function that's invariant under SL2Z, and it's holomorphic on the upper half plane. So the same thing holds for all these SM of tau. So our modular functions of level one, and so that implies that they're in fact in the polynomial algebra generated by J, and their Fourier coefficients lie in Z. This polynomial, in fact, has its coefficients in a ring of polynomials in one variable J. And finally, if you set Jn of tau to be J of n times tau, so in other words, this is J of n001 tau, then phi n of Jn, then Jn is a modular function of level gamma naught of n. This is something that I think we've seen. Yeah, sorry. This is something that you already saw in Florian's talk, where n was p, something like this was. So Jn is a modular function of level gamma naught of n, and just by construction of phi, you see that phi n Jn is zero because it's one of the J of alphas appearing in that product. And finally, Cn of x is actually irreducible over the field of rational functions in one variable. And okay, so in fact, get the field of rational functions of x naught of n by adjoining this modular function of level gamma naught of n, Jn. So the thing now is that this polynomial, you can make sense of it as a polynomial over Q, the rational function in one variable of Q, because its coefficients are integral. Right. So this allows us define models for x naught of n and x of 1, well, over q. And so anytime you have variety over a bigger field, then you usually, if you have one model for it that's defined over some subfield, then you usually have many models for it that are defined over that subfield. I mean, sometimes might not have a model at all over a subfield. But in this case, for the affine line or the projective line, we have a natural model over Q, which is just, again, the affine of the projective line again. So that's a nice thing, even though it's not clear why this should be the chosen model, because you have other models for projective lines, like take a conic that doesn't admit a point over Q, then that won't be a isomorphic projective line, but it will be over C. But the reason why we prefer to think of the model as being the affine line again is because of the modular interpretation that we had above over there. The identification between x of 1 and the affine line was via the J invariant. Okay? So the J invariant, in fact, it can be attached to an elliptic curve or any field. Right? Because it was just defined using some Weierstrass model for it, and you take the coefficients of the Weierstrass model and you get this J function out of it. Right? So if you have E that's attached to some equation that looks like that, then J of E will just be, same kind of definition, it will just be 1728A cubed minus 27B squared. It's the same formula. And this, what this J invariant does is that it helps us distinguish between isomorphism classes of elliptic curves. All right? So the fact is that if I have two elliptic curves over an algebraically closed field, that happens precisely when the J invariants coincide. Right? Fact is, point is that if you have different Weierstrass equations, that doesn't affect the J invariants. Right? I'll give you the same answer. So we take our model for y of 1 to be the affine line, but we think of it as parameterizing elliptic curves via the J invariants. And that's why we think of it as a good model for y of 1 over Q. So y of 1, well, x of 1 and y of 1, well, are just, you just take this to be the projective line over Q and take it to be the affine line over Q, like so. And again, the same description holds. Okay? So we have models over Q. And by this result that we had earlier, that over any field, if you have field of rational functions of transcendence degree 1, then that essentially amounts to giving a smooth projective curve. So we have, so x naught of n also now makes sense, has a model over Q. We just let the field of functions to be where I, j sub n now for me is a root of this polynomial. So to be more precise, this will be And so by construction, this is an extension of the function field of x of 1, so we get a map x naught of n to x of 1, which I call pi 1. It's just where j maps to j on the level of function fields. On the other hand, I have another map, pi 2, where j, in fact, so j is just a variable, so I can send it anywhere. I can particularly send it to j sub n. Right? So that gives me this picture that we already kind of saw in Florian's talk, this pi 1s and pi 2s, except that now it makes sense over Q. Okay? So we have this diagram. And it actually has a modular interpretation, as you might expect. So x of 1 parameterizes just isomorphism classes, or y of 1 parameterizes isomorphism classes of elliptic curves. Y naught of n, which is just the pre-image of y of 1 and y naught of n in x naught of n, what does that... So what one sees is that if y naught of n, again over Q, is the pre-image of y of 1 in y naught of n, sorry, x naught of n, then it recovers the y naught of n that we had before over C, all right? But it now actually has a modular interpretation. This parameterizes pairs E, C, where E is an elliptic curve, and C is so this is the n torsion in E, and it's actually isomorphic over, well, over an algebraic closure, let's say I'm picking only points of algebraic closed fields, then it's actually isomorphic, is Z mod NZ squared. Right? You can see this over complex numbers because you have a lattice mod N times itself. So this here is a cyclic subgroup of rank N, or size N, whatever. Okay, so it's just a copy of Z mod NZ in Z mod NZ squared. Okay, so that's what Y naught of N parameterizes, and this makes sense over Q. And in with this interpretation, with this interpretation, we can kind of describe this diagram in modular terms, right? So you have y naught of n mapping to y of 1, pi 1. So even though this description only applies to the points that are actually in the affine part, the open part, I will often write these diagrams with like so, but I will only describe them on the open parts. So here, this is just a diagram that sends a pair E, C to E, and here it's the map that sends a pair E, C to E, kind of modded out by C. So it's a new elliptic curve that I get by taking the quotient by this finite subgroup. Okay? So that's the picture I have. I will use this picture in the particular situation. So I'll use kind of a different, slightly different picture. So let's take a prime P now. Such that P does not divide N. All right. Then we get a similar kind of picture Oh, sorry. I keep forgetting this somehow. I guess you just draw a line so I remember. Oh, there is. I guess they erased it. Okay. Redraw the line then at some point. So, there must be a line over here as well, I guess. So, all right, so pick a prime, P. P doesn't divide N. Then, what can we do? Well, we have a similar kind of diagram. It looks like this. Same kind of thing. So X naught at NP is again the same, at least Y naught of NP is the same kind of moduli problem. I have E and I have a cyclic subgroup of size NP. But if I have a cyclic subgroup of size NP, then by just a primary decomposition, I can write that as a cyclic subgroup of order n and a cyclic subgroup of order p. Right? So this just parameterizes tuples, triples, where I have a cyclic subgroup of size n and a cyclic subgroup of size p. And pi 2, well, let me first say what pi 1 does. Pi 1 is very simple again. That just sends it to there. And pi 2, again, well, it's what you expect. You mod out by CP. And then you look at the image. I'm going to write CN here. But what I really mean by that is CN, well, let me just write it. So it's CN mod CP. Right? It's CN does not intersect CP, so it maps as a cyclic subgroup of E mod CP, and that's basically the map. Okay, so this again, everything is diagonal and makes sense over Q. So now, let me consider J naught of N. This is a Jacobian of X naught of N. So it is a projective, it's an abelian variety. So this is an abelian variety. So by that I just mean it's a proper algebraic group. And it parameterizes wait till the next board to find out. So what does it parameterize? It just parameterizes degree zero divisors. And similarly, you can make sense of the Jacobian for this, so J naught of NP. but in any case, you won't need that. So this kind of diagram is called a correspondence, and it gives you a map of Jacobians from, even though you don't have a map of curves, you do get a map of Jacobians. So you get a map, pi 1. So this is notation, again, you've seen before. So it's just map induced by, on the level of points of x naught of n, this is just map that sends So the reason I say induced by and not just is because these are not technically points on the Jacobian, but these are divisors, and when you, because your divisor classes actually. Okay. So this is a map on the level of Jacobians, and this is what I like to call the Hecke operator, T sub P. And what does this have to do with one Fourier defined earlier? Essentially what happens is that you can identify x naught, h naught of this. If you take the dual of this, that can be identified with the tangent space of 0 of j naught of n. And so here you have the weight 2 level gamma naught of n modular forms. Okay, and when you look at the map induced in tangent spaces by TP, then essentially that corresponds to the Hecke operator we saw before in terms of double cosets. Okay, so so this is kind of a geometric incarnation of the Hecke operator, and what you see is that for, at least for weight 2 modular forms, you can essentially, they just kind of live over the Jacobian of x naught of n. All right. So, and you can see the Hecke operators kind of very geometrically, at least in weight 2. So well, so this is a little hard to motivate, but so what we actually really need, we'd like to have, is nice models for these curves, these Hecke operators that don't just make sense over Q, but maybe integrally, so that you can reduce mod a prime P. And the reason we'd like to do that is because eventually the goal is to be able to compare the action of the Hecke operator, the action of a Galois group. And the way you do this is by kind of reducing mod P and comparing what the Hecke operator does to the action of Frobenius mod P. So what we'd like is to have nice integral models for these things that you can actually reduce mod P to see what's going on. So that's what we'll talk about now. So again, y of 1 inside of x of 1 has a natural integral model you just take y1z x1z, this to be the projective line over z, and this to be affine line over z. All right. And again, the motivation for this kind of extension is again the same. you can have, if you have family of elliptic curves, again, they're somehow parametrized by the, you can, by the J invariants. So this is a good definition for a model over Z. So what you'd like now are models for X naught of N, so that you can then maybe try to define that Haeckel operator on the level of Jacobians, mod P, and then you can test it to see what it actually does. All right? So, right. So Y naught of N also has a good model over Z, but I'm going to invert N. All right? And again, it'll be the same thing. It'll, the same description holds. It still parameterizes elliptic curves with a Stickley subgroup rank N. If you got to make that has the same description. Yep. More or less. Okay. So, but why do I have to invert this N? It's because P torsion does not behave well mod P. All right. So if you take E, an elliptic curve over FB bar, then to look at the P torsion in its points defined with algebraic closure, in this case it's just over FB bar, then, this is either Z mod PZ or zero, depending on whether my curve is super singular. Well, if it's ordinary, which is when it has a Z mod PZ, or if it's super singular, when it has no points defined over FB bar. All right? So this is super singular. This is ordinary. And anyway, I want to emphasize now this kind of... this is the only good way we know of getting good models over the integers is to define them as a moduli problem that makes sense over the integers. Okay? So this is a very natural way to proceed. And but what we really like is to be able to make sense of this diagram over Z with maybe N inverted. All right? The problem with that is that the description of why not if NP in terms of the cyclic subgroups of rank P is badly behaved, because if I have a supersingular point, then that'll have no cyclic subgroups at all of rank P. All right? So, so what we do is the following. What is going on here is what is this. So if I have, so over FP bar, we have the Frobenius substitution X maps to X to the P. Right? And this is somehow the key to everything. And so if I have an elliptic curve, E, defined by some Weierstrass equation, then I get a new elliptic curve, which I call the Frobenius twist, and this will be defined by the same kind of equation, except that my coefficients are changed by the Frobenius, the p power Frobenius. So, and over here we have the Frobenius for E, which is a map from e to this Frobenius twist is basically given by xy . So this is a homomorphism. Is a purely inseparable homomorphism of degree p. All right? And what that means is that if I look at the preimage of 0 as a scheme, so as the kernel of F, this is equal, so as spec R, where all R really has are nilpotent elements. So it's, when I look at the reduced algebra underlying R, it's just FB bar. And that's why you don't see this whole kernel when I look at FB bar points. So this implies, okay? So this is the reason why you kind of don't see the torsion on the level of points, because the Frobenius is a purely inseparable map. So if, so we also, this is, we'll need this later, we also have a map V which goes from Frobenius twist to E, it's called the Verschiebung, and this is the unique map. What? It's getting too low again. Sorry. This is the line. Right. Great. I should make that a little more prominent. Thanks for keeping track of this. All right. So we have that map over there, V. And V satisfies, so we have FV equals VF equals P. In other words, I do that, and I do that. That's just multiplication by P. Okay? And so whether the curve is supersingular or not depends on whether this V is itself purely inseparable. All right? So what you see is that E is supersingular if only if, well, it's a bunch of conditions. V is purely inseparable. Well, that's the same as saying that E is isomorphic to its second Frobenius twist. Okay? So this is, all right, and this is basically what tells you that you only have up to isomorphism of finitely many curves that are supersingular, because their J invariants have to lie in FP squared because of that. Okay? So what we'd like to do now is kind of replace the condition. So how can we kind of keep this Frobenius around while, so it turns out the only way to keep Frobenius around is to change our definition of y naught of NP, right? So instead of considering cyclic subgroups CP inside of here, we think of, well, we will consider isogenies, E goes to E prime of degree P. By this, I just mean it's a map of elliptic curves. And generically, the function field of E is the degree P extension of the function field of E prime. All right? So we'll define if I'm in hard labor right here. All right, so so we can now redefine y naught of NP so that it makes sense even when P is not invertible. All right, so I can actually talk about it mod P. So the way I do that is I can now, so y naught of NP. By the way, I've been talking about integral models for these affine curves. But really, in the end, if we want to talk about Jacobians, I need integral models for the projective curves. You can get around that pretty easily. So let me just talk about this now. So y naught of NP will parameterize. So this is a model over Z 1 over N, in fact, Z 1 over P, or Z, in fact, over Z. Well, N over N. No, it's a model over Z 1 over N. It'll parameterize triples where E is an elliptic curve C again is a cyclic let me just use N. Okay, and alpha is a P isogeny. That is, it's an isogeny of degree P. So if P is invertible, then having a P isogeny automatically implies that you have the kernel of the P isogeny is isomorphic to Z mod PZ. All right? And so you recover the previous definition when you actually invert P. All right? But this definition makes sense even if you don't invert P, which is why we like it. All right? So then we have this diagram. Trying to tell you what I mean by so what is x naught of n? Well, x naught of n or x naught of np with well, for now we can just take this to be the normalization. Doesn't really matter. All we need to know is that we have these projective things, all right, of just want to show you that they exist. And it turns out that even with this definition, you can show that x naught of n reduces to a smooth projective curve over FP. All right, so what is this diagram here? This diagram is, again, this usual kind of thing. I have pi 1 and pi 2. Well, I have E, C, N, and alpha. So alpha goes from E to E prime. Well, this will just be E prime alpha of Cn. And this would just be the map that forgets the alpha. Yeah, question? You don't have to invert P. Yeah, see, that's the, we have this description without inverting P. That's the whole point. That if you, instead of thinking about cyclic subgroups, if you think about isogenies, then that makes sense, even if you don't invert P.
And also, this E
whichever field you prefer, as long as n is invertible. Right? So I'm being deliberately vague about what my things are. I would pick as defined over, but essentially, yeah. Okay. So you have this this diagram, and it's a result, like, let's say it's a fact, is that if I reduce x naught of n mod p, then this is a smooth projective curve. So, I mean, I've defined it in some way as a normalization and so on, but still turns out that it's nice enough. Okay. So we can talk about a Jacobian. So x naught of n sp is a smooth projective curve, but x naught of np is not. All right? So x naught is not quite smooth. What is happening here is that so things are always easier when you're dealing with ordinary elliptic curves. All right, so we're going to look at what's called the ordinary locus. This will be all the, okay, so the ordinary locus is basically where this is ordinary. And similarly, we have x naught of n ordinary. And pi 1 or pi 2 both actually take the ordinary part of the ordinary part. So if you have an elliptic curve, ordinary elliptic curve over FB bar, then essentially upright isomorphism only has two p isogenies. All right? So, well, it has, you have the Frobenius, and they're distinct. It has two distinct p isogenies, upright isomorphism, which are, you have the Frobenius, and you have, so what is this? You have the Verschiebung over there, which is a map from the Frobenius twist of E to E. You can untwist that by the Frobenius. So instead of taking P power, we take P inverse power, right? And then you get this map V of P inverse. In any case, these are the two kind of distinct P isogenies that an elliptic curve has. So we now get this diagram that looks like this. The point is that those two are definitely distinct up to isomorphism. This would not be true if the curve were super singular. Then they would be the same isogeny. Okay? So consider the following diagram. So I have pi 1 as usual over here. I have pi 2. So this, let me call this alpha and beta. So what does alpha do? Alpha sends a pair e comma c to the tuple EC and the Frobenius from E. Is it there? And what does beta do? Beta sends EC to the tuple a Frobenius twist P, a Frobenius twist the cyclic subgroup, and then I take the Verschiebung from E to its Frobenius twist, sorry, E from Frobenius twist of E to E. And when I take the composition, beta, pi 2 composed of beta, this is just the identity. And when I take a composition of pi 1 composed of alpha, this is also the identity. All right. So what I have now is I have two sections on the ordinary locus, one for pi 1 and one for pi 2, right? And turns out that the ordinary locus of x naught of NP is a disjoint union of these two. And so when E is a super singular curve, as I said, these two things, they coalesce, all right, the Frobenius and the Verschiebung, they kind of give you the same sort of thing. So what happens is that these two copies of x naught of n, no, it's fine. All right. So what happens is that you get the following kind of picture for x naught of NP. So it looks like this. I guess I'm... So you have two copies of x naught of n. So you have alpha of x naught of n, and you have beta of x naught of n, and they intersect transversely at the supersingular points. So this is kind of the picture. For that. And so what I'd like to finish with is kind of a description of the Hecke operator TP. So if I restrict myself to the two sections that I have here, so I have alpha of x naught and beta of x naught, and I can restrict this diagram that I see above, pi 1, pi 2, to each of those sections. So in this diagram, so when I take the composition of pi 2 with beta, I just get the identity. Pi 1 with alpha, I get the identity. But I can go the other way. I can go pi 2 with alpha and pi 1 with beta, right? And in these situations, I see that pi 2 composed with alpha or equals pi 1 composed with beta. And this is the map from x naught of n, ordinary locus, to x naught of n, ordinary. And what is this map? This is the map that sends a pair E, C to the Frobenius twist E, P, CP. So it, in other words, if you kind of check what's happening, this is exactly the Frobenius endomorphism of X naught of N, the ordinary locus of X naught of N. The Frobenius endomorphism given by taking powers of any system of equations that defines them. All right? And this is the degree P isogeny of curves. So when you restrict that diagram pi 1, pi 2 to alpha, so you get alpha of x naught of n, right? So pi 1 is just the identity. And pi 2 is the Frobenius endomorphism. When I restrict it to beta, pi 1 is now the Frobenius, and pi 2 is the identity. All right? So this is all on the ordinary locus. All right? So what I see is that when I restrict to these two sections in the ordinary locus, so here, TP just looks like it's pulled back with the identity and pushed forward by F, right? So it's just F star, all right? And here, it's pulled back by F and pushed forward by the identity, so it's just pulled back by F, all right? So when you put these two things together, you get the Eichler-Shimura relation, which says that TP, when you restrict it to... Oh, sorry. I can raise the board. That's a valid solution. Okay. So when you put these two things together, you see that TP equals F star plus F upper star, at least on the ordinary locus, so to speak. But the ordinary locus is dense, and so it kind of extends to inequality everywhere, right? So you got this, so this is the Eichler-Shimura relation. So it kind of tells you the relationship between the action of the Hecke operator and the action of Frobenius at P. Right. I'm done.